From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. When was the last time you had an adult beverage? Some of us never touch beer, wine, or liquor, but many people do drink from time to time, whether at a bar or at home. That said, some drink more often than they ought to, and that still includes teenagers, despite the legal prohibitions. We're learning more about the relationships of our fellow Illinoisans that they have with alcohol. Recently, the State Department of Public Health put out a comprehensive report on this topic. We'll have the link to that at our website, 21stshow.org. For the first part of our program today, we're going to talk about what the report found, why some of those results are what they are, and what all this means for our health, publicly and individually. Joining us now from the Illinois Department of Public Health to talk about this is Cole Forbes. He's an Applied Epidemiology Fellow in the department's Division of Emerging Health Issues. Cole, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here today.
Also with us is Catherine Fairbairn. She is an associate professor in the Department of Psychology at the U of I Urbana-Champaign. More to the point for our conversation, she's the principal investigator for the U of I's Alcohol Research Lab, which explores the effects alcohol has on us socially, emotionally, and cognitively. Catherine, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
Listeners, you can join us today at 800-222-9455. If you do drink, when and where do you choose to do so? And what do you think of public health advice around drinking, which is changing by the day? What could we be doing differently as a society about this, if you think we should? 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, Cole Forbes from the Illinois Department of Public Health. I'm going to say we're a radio show, so we try not to go, you know, we know that spewing a lot of numbers doesn't necessarily translate to listeners. But with that in mind, what do we know about how many people drink in Illinois?
Yeah, great question. And I'll keep it a little less numbers heavy for you all today. So some of the more surprising data that came out of this report, and again, this is the first time in Illinois that we've had a statewide, truly a statewide report and understanding of alcohol use. We found that almost a fifth of all Illinois high schoolers are reporting having drank at least one beverage in the last 30 days, alcoholic beverage. And more importantly, when we start talking about things like binge drinking here, so when we talk about young women, young children, usually about four drinks in a few hours, and for young boys and males, about five or more, we found that 11% acknowledged binge drinking in the last 30 days. And more importantly, that this was almost double as likely among young females. So about 28% of young girls are reporting binge drinking, and only about 8% of males. So quite an alarming disparity there.
What do you define as a young girl in this case?
So the data that we use is from a survey we call the Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance Survey here. So all Illinois high schoolers report anything from substance use to how often they eat carrots a day, right? And so we use that data. It's a self-reported metric here. And so young girls here just being teenage range, we really are surveying here 14 to 18-year-olds, 19 sometimes.
And I understand that for adults, it was what, 3 out of 5 roughly people say
Correct.
They've had? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, three out of five. So we saw that around 57% of respondents, and this is the adult version of that same survey, reported about one alcoholic beverage in the past 30 days. And when we start pulling it apart by age groups, that's when we start to see some more alarming disparities here. So more broadly, we found that 18% of adults acknowledged binge drinking in the last in the last 30 days. And here again, it's going to be for males, adult men, 5 or more drinks in an hour, and for young women, 4 or more drinks in a couple of hours. And we found that binge drinking was more common among the younger adults. So 25% of those 18 to 24 in Illinois reported binge drinking in the last 30 days, and over 26% of those from 25 to 44. And even among those adults, we found that LGBT plus adults are reporting more drinking as well.
Okay. In some ways, and Catherine Fairbairn, I'm going to bring you into the conversation now. I mean, I think it's not too surprising that young people drink more than you know, people in their 20s, college students, right? I mean, that's a stereotype or a fact that's been with us for generations now. But talk more about, you know, trends you may be seeing with younger people and their relationship with alcohol.
So we've been seeing some trends that I think could be described as pretty heartening in certain ways among younger people. And I think oftentimes it's kind of associated with this Gen Z, so folks who were born near to or after the year 2000. And that would definitely include the cohort of folks who Cole was talking about. So we're seeing some pretty unprecedented declines in both general alcohol use as well as binge drinking in this age bracket. And there's a lot people have sort of thought about a lot of potential causes for that, ranging from marijuana to shifting contexts of use, as well as increasing health consciousness.
That's interesting. I want to come back to that marijuana point in a moment. But one of the other things that struck me was Cole mentioned LGBT people. What do you understand about that?
So this is a lot of what was in the Illinois report. I mean, it was a fantastic report, really exciting, and also quite a number of those trends did mirror what we see in broader population samples as well. So it is true that members of LGBTQ populations are at risk for increased drinking as well as increased hazardous drinking. So in Illinois, we are seeing that kind of increased vulnerability among sexual minority populations that we do also see nationwide.
Interesting. I guess I'd wondered if it was also part of the idea that, at least for older generations, people would, bars were the place, right, to gather for people who were gay or lesbian. And I know that's changed somewhat. We've had conversations on the program about that, but it does seem to be, or at least it was, part of the culture in some ways.
Absolutely. So I do think that kind of shifts, there have been shifts around socializing as well as just the extent to which people are socializing. So I'm sure you guys are sort of, there's been a lot of writing about sort of the epidemic of loneliness, how people are increasingly kind of isolating themselves and relegating their social interactions to online contexts, for example. And alcohol, at least traditionally, has been a substance of in-person social interactions. So it's yeah, it's it some of those overall declining trends certainly could be linked to this sort of a potential move away from a bar culture, specifically among Gen Z populations. With respect to the LGBTQ sample in particular, I actually think that that is a unique case where I think gay bars retain a real kind of place in among LGBTQ populations. There's a real kind of it's a real it can be thought of as sort of safe place, a sanctuary, a place of belonging. And I think that is as kind of subculture where we see a retention of that in-person drinking context, including both its positive and some of the struggles that go along with that as well.
All right, let me take a moment to remind listeners this is the 21st show. We're talking about a relatively new report that takes a deep dive into the relationships Illinoisans have with alcohol. We're talking about it with Catherine Fairbairn, Associate Professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Cole Forbes with the Illinois Department of Public Health. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. And let's now go to the phones. We have Michael calling in from DeKalb County. Michael, thanks for calling in.
Hi there.
How you doing? So I understand you work as an addiction counselor.
I did for 17 years. I was a senior addictions counselor in the state of Illinois. My more recent work at the university was as the director of the National Social Norm Resource Center. And we looked at normative influence on alcohol use behavior, particularly with teens. And we found that, like your epidemiologist reported, one out of five teens drank alcohol in the last 30 days. That's a problem-focused approach to public health. We have a solution-focused approach, which looks at the 80% who don't drink and why they don't. Every time we focus on the minority of people who do the problem behavior, we actually normalize that problem behavior and make it more likely to occur and be expected within a population. Our research found that when we focus on the solution, we find the 80% and what they do right, and we make that evident to the public in a variety of ways in the media. We actually get greater numbers of people doing the healthy behavior. I think it's important, even though epidemiology is the science of reporting about the incidence and prevalence of the problem, we can't lose sight that focusing on a solution begets more solutions.
Michael, that is an interesting perspective. Thanks so much for calling in with that. Cole, I'll put that to you. What about the what do you think about framing this as, you know, the X percentage who are you know, having a problematic relationship with alcohol versus the majority that still has a, well, for teenagers, an appropriate no relationship with alcohol, perhaps?
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to first, you know, thank the caller for the work they've done in the field. You know, it's really, we sit at the state level, right? There's a lot of data collection that we do and a lot of analysis, but it's really the nonprofit organizations, you know, those people kind of doing the boots on the ground work across the state that are getting people to the access to the care and the services they need. So, you know, that's my first part of that. I would also say when we talk about substance use, and we've touched on this a little bit talking about the queer community, there's a lot of different subcultures around drinking, right? And we want to be careful when we are using language around substance use, not to stigmatize or to place blame on any individual. And I would agree that for far too long, there's been this deficit approach in the public health world. And it is important to focus on solutions, right? So to that point, I would say that when we're talking about underage drinking or drinking among youth or even risky behaviors, we really want to focus more on the binge and the heavy drinking risk. And so something that recently occurred at the federal level was there was updated guidelines for alcohol use that actually removed any guideline for alcohol use among youth. So kind of just saying, hey, let's take it's better for your health to avoid, rather than empowering and educating people to make more informed decisions about alcohol use. And that's ultimately the goal of the Illinois Department of Public Health and for researchers such as myself, is that when we are engaging in substance use, are people and our communities the most knowledgeable they can be about the risks and the adverse health outcomes? And so a couple of things just even to touch on, you know, we know that alcohol is a carcinogen, right? It increases your risk of cancer. And we found a recent report by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, less than 50% of U.S. adults were aware that that was the case. And just to put it into perspective, over 80% are aware that tobacco is a carcinogen and leads to cancers. So that's a good example of areas, particularly among youth. And then when we see that reflected in the data that younger generations are more likely to drink, this is opens up a door for discussion about, hey, how can we frame this and educate these communities and these disproportionately affected populations that way to, you know, kind of get the sweet spot, right? Avoid stigma and avoid placing blame, but at the same time, still be warning people about the risks and try to focus on, hey, what are we doing? What are people doing when they're avoiding substances? And a perfect case of this among queer adults, you know, we're talking about subcultures, is are there spaces, safe spaces, or even just spaces for, you know, the play outside of work that people can go that aren't centered around alcohol or other substance use? And so those are some conversations that we're having at the health department and with some different nonprofits. But I appreciate that question.
Catherine Fairbairn, what about that? What about the way we are, you know, approaching this among younger people in particular, as, you know, it's something that seems maybe exciting and taboo. And, you know, Europe, for example, I think alcohol is more normalized there, and maybe they don't seem to have the same problems because it's not like a counterculture or counter adult thing to do. I don't know. We only have about a minute and a half before we need to take a break. But what do you think of that?
Yeah, well, it's a really interesting perspective, and I really appreciated Michael's point there. So I think with this stuff, there's a balance. If you don't, just sort of like Cole was mentioning, if you don't point out and emphasize some of the risks, then there's a harm of kind of just ignoring something that is critically important, of not educating the public. Yet at the same time, if you only focus on the folks who are struggling, then you lose an opportunity to kind of celebrate and create a culture around the kind of folks who are doing it right, who are ultimately the vast majority of folks. And I think that's something that we see among young adult culture and now expanding as well, is this real, for the first time, creation of places that are not home, that are not work, and also that are not centered around alcohol. So, for example, dry bars are becoming much more prevalent now. When you want a non-alcoholic beverage, even when you go to a regular bar, you no longer have the choice between just a beautiful, elaborate alcoholic cocktail or alternatively tonic water, which was in the past. Instead, you have an equally kind of mindful and delicious list of non-alcoholic cocktails now. So there's a huge cultural shift happening. I think it's very important to both celebrate that broadly as well as kind of understand and explore protective factors for the folks who are able to maintain moderate drinking.
All right, we're going to continue this conversation on this relatively new report from the Illinois Department of Public Health on our fellow Illinoisans' relationship with alcohol. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. We'll be back in a moment. This is the 21st Show. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about a new report from the Illinois Department of Public Health that takes a deep dive into the relationship that Illinoisans have with alcohol. My guests for this conversation are Cole Forbes with the department and Catherine Fairbairn, who is an associate professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Illinois and principal investigator of the university's Alcohol Research Lab. 800-222-9455. To join us today. Catherine, let me come back to you. So when does drinking really get to be a problem? How do we understand that?
That is a great question. And the answer is that it's very complicated and that problem drinking can look very different across different people. That said, I do think it's really important to have some predefined thresholds that we communicate to the public that allow people to kind of do that internal reference and scan. So I would say there's two general categories of questions that you could ask yourself. One has to do with the effects of your drinking. So questions like, do people in my life tell me that they're worried about my drinking? Has anybody told me that I drink too much? Questions like that. Questions like, have I attempted to cut down but not been able to? So if you answered yes to either of those are questions you'll see on common screeners, and they can indicate to you that there might be some warning signs that it might be time to take a second look at your drinking. Another set of questions we could ask have to do with the actual quantity of alcohol consumed. And I think that is very important as well, because there are actual biological effects of alcohol in the body. There are a range of different criteria you can use, including ones that used to be adopted by NIAAA. One that I think is a pretty liberal cutoff is, am I binge drinking more than once a week? So for example, are you drinking 4 drinks in a sitting for women or 5 drinks in a sitting for men in a single episode? And is that happening at least once a week or more than that? And if you answered yes to either category of those questions, that could indicate that there might be either social effects of alcohol in your life, or there might be the potential for harm to your body.
I think we referenced earlier some of the changes to policy. I mean, this is very new. I think it was just in the last day or so. The federal government has issued updated dietary guidelines. And part of that, the recommendation used to be no more than 2 drinks a day for men, 1 for women. New guidelines remove those limits and basically say people should, quote, limit alcohol beverages. It also removed warnings about alcohol and the risk of breast cancer, for example. Catherine, I wonder what you think the message the federal government is trying to send here.
It's a little hard to know what the message, the intended message is. I think if you take a generous view, it would be that it is very the task of defining a very specific threshold for there is no one size fits all, and that's incontrovertible. On the other hand, it is notable that in recent years we've had more and more evidence that there aren't substantial health benefits linked with moderate drinking, and that the very safest level of drinking is no drinking. And it's notable that at least apparently our government guidelines are becoming more liberal just at the time when we've had this evidence of a lot of bodily harm linked with even moderate levels of consumption. I think that at the end of the day, everyone will make their own choices about drinking. They'll make it in their own context, and problem drinking does not look the same for every person. At the same time, I think the public deserves specific information about harms linked with drinking, including some evidence about specific drinking thresholds.
Cole, can you say more about that, about this, this newer relatively, because I mean, people might have stuck in their heads, oh, do like the French do, drink a glass of wine a day, it's okay. But the advice really, or the information, the evidence we have really is changing on some of the effects that alcohol can have, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a bit alarming to learn that those guidelines had changed. I think change is inevitable and it can be good, but I think we still need to be relying on the science and kind of what our research and our academic institutions are putting out. And to Catherine's point, yes,
And I'm sorry,
I
I'll just
think.
interrupt you to say, because I feel like we're dancing around it. The context here is this is from the same federal agency that has rejected, decades of scientific understanding and research on vaccines and many other areas of public health. So I think that's context worth considering. And I try to approach every new government pronouncement with an open mind and a clean slate, but it is important to have that context in mind. So I'm sorry I interrupted you, but
Oh, not at
please
all.
continue.
Absolutely. And I do think that's important information. And again, our goal at the Department of Public Health is to empower and educate communities so they are able to make healthier and choices in their life. And so, yeah, when you see, Catherine mentioned, binge drinking once a week. There was that report by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services before this current administration came in. And, we found that, okay, you binge drink once or twice a week, that can increase your breast cancer rate, 2 to 3 times, depending on, again, it's always different depending on male, female, and different social aspects. But, it's important to know these things. I mean, we're looking at between 2020 and 2023 in Illinois, we had 1,400 alcohol attributable liver disease deaths, right? And then another 1,800 deaths from just cardiovascular outcomes alone that were attributable to alcohol. So, it can be alarming. And yeah, we in Illinois, we're already having discussions about what our guidelines will be and how those are going to be similar or different from the newly released guidelines in Illinois. And so I encourage you all to stay up to date with that. I'm sure in the next 48 hours, we will have something out about what we advise health departments, clinicians, and our communities in Illinois out. So keep a lookout for that to share more on that soon.
Fair enough. Catherine, we're coming to the end of our time together. I want to return to a topic you mentioned earlier, and I read something about this in an essay recently. You made a very similar point, which is, people used to get drunk together in bars. Now they're getting high alone at home. And the essay I read that in was sort of lamenting that cultural shift. I'm sure it's a mixed bag, but what do you think of that? Pull on that thread for us, as both a statement of fact and sociological analysis.
Yeah, it is. That's very well said. So my work has, I think, in the past, there has been an idea that social drinking is never problem drinking, and in fact, that term has been used as synonymous with non-problem drinking. And so my work has actually tried to kind of bring that into question and point out that some of the most hazardous patterns of drinking can occur in social context. At the same time, social contexts are some of the most critical sources of well-being and joy to human beings. So I hope that I think that they can bring us discomfort and anxiety at times, and I think alcohol has been our sort of drug of choice for helping us with those side effects. But at the other times, if we can get through that, we these social contexts can enrich our lives. And I think what is key at this moment, as we kind of all recede inwards, it seems, and recede online, is to keep those in-person places open, to keep those third places, as they're sometimes referred to, those places that aren't home and work open, but to get really creative in finding ways of connecting people in ways that don't rely on consuming large amounts of alcohol. And I think that takes some ingenuity because I think people believe alcohol does work for them in those contexts, but I think it is possible and I think we're seeing it now.
Are we heading for an era where we will need to sort of step up our understanding of, effects of cannabis that they're having on people, right? We're at the point now we've had, centuries of relationships with alcohol to the point where we have government agencies, at the state and federal level, even the local level in some cases. And yet I don't think there's any, sort of national institute on cannabis use or anything because it's only very recently that it has become, not sort of a fully abstinence only or prohibition model in certain states, still is at the federal government, I guess. I mean, is there work being done? Are people thinking about trying to study the effects that cannabis is having on us on a population level?
Absolutely. And it's very interesting to think of this possibility. I'm not sure we have proof of it yet, but it's possible that cannabis will become the new alcohol. And I think in the past, Brian, we've kind of had these, because there was such a debate around cannabis, people kind of naturally divided themselves into the cannabis is an evil substance, just like heroin. Leads people down a vicious path. And
Gateway
then on the other
drugs,
hand,
yes, the demon
and
weed,
then on the
yes.
other hand, is kind of it's absolutely fine. And like anything, I think the truth lies between these two. And that we need more research specifically. We don't know enough, and we need more research to kind of understand what that kind of intermediate truth might look like.
And I will just chime in real quick, Catherine. As we, you mentioned briefly that cannabis may be becoming the new alcohol, and just in the data that we've seen on our crash data on Illinois roadways, we found that from 2016 to 2022, the number one substance found was cannabis at 63% of all crashes, whereas alcohol was only 37%. So we do want to, keep the messaging out there that hey, these are impairing driving, and so it's definitely something that we're trying to keep track of and mitigate, and kind of at the health department level.
We're going to have to leave it there. Cole Forbes is with the Illinois Department of Public Health. Catherine Fairbairn is with the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign Department of Psychology and principal investigator at the Alcohol Research Lab. Thank you both for your time today.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much.